on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
So what is the evolution now? Where do we need to evolve to? I would say it'd be a good thing to probably to evolve to the point of stopping destroying the planet. I think that would be a good move right now, like now. And so when you look at that, so that's a consciousness thing. That's a conscious evolution. So some might say it's on a spiritual level. And so when you look at it and you say, okay, so what have plants been doing in the last, few decades? What has been the emphasis with plants and people? There was a huge explosion, certainly the 60s, which is my era of youth. Before that, maybe a little bit, but a huge explosion that started to happen in opening doors of perception with plants. Mm.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, and humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth.
I'm your host, Nick Mather, and in this episode, author Pam Montgomery joins me to discuss her new book, Co-Creating with Nature, Healing the Wound of Separation. Pam discusses the intelligence and consciousness of plants, their evolutionary processes, and the importance of decolonizing our minds and hearts to truly appreciate our relationship with the natural world, emphasizing that humans are an integral part of nature and are called to a co-creative partnership with nature. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. Pam Montgomery is a herbalist, nature evolutionary, international teacher, and earth elder who has passionately embraced her role as a spokesperson for the green beings. A founding member of United Plant Savers and the Organization of Nature Evolutionaries, she is the author of two books, including Plant Spirit Healing. She joins me today to discuss her latest book, Co-Creating with Nature, Healing the Wound of Separation. Pam, welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to speaking with you. As I mentioned before hitting record, your book is kind of right up my alley, so I'm excited for the conversation. I thought that the place to begin would be with the title, actually, and to ask you to explain, what do you mean by co-creative partnership with nature?
Yes, well, it's kind of exactly like the words sound like. It's a partnership that's together. So there's no hierarchy here. One is not better than the other with nature. So we're talking about human beings being in partnership with nature. And what this is really all about in this book is about taking up our rightful place as a part of nature. And that we're a part of nature as well, but we have fallen into this deep amnesia and have forgotten that we are. And so really the co-creative partnership part, I mean, there's aspects to it, and is really about kind of like, it's like a map leading us home to nature. And that's really what it's about. So it's just recognizing that nature, and, there's aspects of nature, of course, a big part being plants and trees and sea vegetables, that we're very symbiotically related to. I mean, they're our kin. And so that's what we're talking about with co-creative partnership. It's where together we make manifest in form. I mean, we are physical beings in form here, so it's a lot about that. But we do that together with being able to look at different aspects in an equal relationship where all life can thrive. It's about thriving. It's not about just surviving. It's about thriving. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, what it's about.
All right, good. I'm going to kind of push you a little bit here on the term nature, because I think that the way that you're using nature is probably a little bit different than how most people or many people may understand nature. And it's one of those terms, you have to forgive the philosopher in me, where I'm always like, well, what do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? And you kind of addressed it a little bit, but I wanted to ask you to kind of flesh out your idea of what nature is.
Yeah. Well, nature with a capital N. So I hope everybody understands what capitalizing a word means. And with nature, I mean, it really has to do with, by the way, the woman who wrote the foreword for my book, Myra Jackson, who's this awesome person. She's the one who in the Oxford Dictionary actually presented why you would capitalize nature, and they did it. So it's kind of like, ooh. Anyway, so I understand completely what you're saying is like, okay, so the difference between what I'm talking about and what other people kind of, when they say nature, is like, well, nature's, for many people, it's kind of out there. It's out there. And, oh, let's go take a hike in nature, or let's go, you know, oh, let's go to the ocean and be in nature for the weekend. And so it's still separate. It's still something that's outside of yourself, or something that is like a special little event you go do, or, you know, it's the environment, but it's not, there's not a connection. Still, there's not a connection. It's still out there. So what I'm trying to say, my definition of nature is it's not out there. It's in here because we're animals. We're a part of nature, just like everything else here on this planet. We're a part of this nature. And so to have it be out there, that means we separate from nature, which you can extend that we separate from ourselves. So we don't really know who we are. And especially in relationship to nature, that is part of who we are. You know, if I could give a little example here.
Please.
I mean, plants and trees and sea vegetables make up, it used to be 99%. Now with the massive cutting of the rainforest and all that, it's actually more like down to 80%. But still, plants, trees, and sea vegetables are predominant on this planet. And they started their evolution, let's see, what it's 4 billion years ago. So they got the long view. They've been here for a long time, way longer than us. We came on the scene. We're pretty new on the scene. But all the oxygen on the planet is from plants and trees and sea vegetables, all of it. And we wouldn't be sitting here talking to each other because we wouldn't have our breath. Because they breathe out oxygen and they breathe in carbon dioxide. So it's really this, we're very symbiotically related in our breath. And so this is something that everybody across the planet breathes, or you wouldn't be here. And the reason you can breathe is because of plants, which are a predominant aspect of nature. One of the predominant, the other predominant one being water, the oceans. And we don't make tissue from sunlight. Plants make tissue from sunlight, and then they, you know, form their sugars and starches and their leaves and the da-da-da-da-da, which we eat, or we eat an animal that ate a plant, but it all began with plants. So we have our tissue because of plants. And we also, I mean, there's many levels of our symbiotic relationship, which I wrote about in the book. So, but that's just kind of, that's kind of basic. That's basic, is you would not be here if it wasn't for a very large aspect of nature, which is plants and trees and sea vegetables. So I think that's a pretty big difference than what most people are thinking of as nature.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I love the, what you say about, and what you write about, that we share breath with the plants, you know, that what they breathe out, we breathe in, and what we breathe out, they breathe in. And I love that connection. And we often don't think about that.
That means, not to interrupt you, but that means that we're already in relationship.
Yeah.
By the mere fact that we breathe. It's not like you got to go out and find a relationship or build a relationship. No, you're already there. Right. Now, from that conscious awareness, that, oh, my breath actually comes from the, and then my exhale is their inhale. It's like this cycle of breath. So from that place, you can, it's like a springboard into this awareness that, oh, we can actually build our, into a partnership, a real partnership here, because we're already in relationship. So right. Go ahead.
No, the only other thing I was going to add to that was, with how you're describing nature, it's something that I try to get across to my students, is we are always in nature. You know, that separation is illusory. And often we'll be in a classroom and I say, okay, well, where did all this stuff come from? You know, it comes from the earth. It's all nature. So, yeah. But let me ask you this, because, and this is, I think, a huge segment of the book and the work that you do, and also how you understand nature, is that you write that there's a vast intelligence in nature. And you talk about nature consciousness. And I think that's the other thing that is different than the common understanding of nature, because we tend to see nature as not quite alive, and we certainly don't see it as being conscious.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of phenomenal to me that, I mean, people really don't think nature's alive. I mean, it kind of makes me go, really? But okay, but I get the whole consciousness part. I mean, there's a lot being written now about nature consciousness, and even in kind of mainstream stuff. But again, okay, so I'm going to go back to the symbiotic piece of this. And again, like the timeline, you know, like maybe it was 1.8 billion years ago, somewhere around in that time period, there was a single algal line, the cyanobacteria, so blue-green algae kind of stuff, where plants started to make decisions about their future. It's like about, you know, how they were going to reproduce, how, you know, what their inherent qualities were going to be. I mean, they literally, it was like, you know, you hang out in the soup for, you know, a couple billion years, and then it, you know, you come to a level of like, okay, well, if we're going to continue on this, in this place, in this milieu, in this atmosphere, which, well, okay, I'm not going to jump ahead. So I get a little excited. So I got to be careful to like reel myself in. So it was at that point in time where they started to do that, started to make decisions about their future. Now, that implies self-awareness. And that's really what, I mean, some would say that's what consciousness is when you become self-aware. And so they became aware that, oh, if we want to thrive, if we want to continue this thing we're, you know, which we call life, I'm not sure what they were calling it, but life, if we want to continue, we've got to like make some decisions here. And so they started doing that 1.8 billion years ago. And we weren't even, you know, a glimmer in their little eye at that time. So now the hypothesis is, in the scientific arena of the folks who are talking about all this kind of stuff, is that that event, not that it happened like boom like that, but, you know, took a little time, but that event was the beginning of what we would call higher mind. And that our ability to be conscious beings and have what we would refer to as higher mind stemmed from that event, that time period, because plants started doing that. So, and then of course, it's just, there's been lots and lots and lots and lots of eons since then. And so what is also known very well in, is that plants always precede their animal counterparts in evolution. I mean, that's just the way it's been. So, for example, angiosperms, flowering plants that have internal reproductive organs, evolved before mammals who have internal reproductive organs, because mammals needed something to eat. And so they evolved first. And so when you look at that and you say, Oh, they always preceded us, preceded their animal counterparts in evolution. And so it's not. So what is the evolution now? Where do we need to evolve to? I would say it'd be a good thing to probably to evolve to the point of stopping destroying the planet. I think that would be a good move right now, like now. And so when you look at that, so that's like a rate, that's a consciousness thing. That's a conscious evolution. So some might say it's on a spiritual level. And so when you look at it, and you say, okay, so what have plants been doing in the last, a few decades? What has been the emphasis with plants and people? There was a huge explosion, certainly the 60s, which is my era of youth. Before that, maybe a little bit, but a huge explosion that started to happen in opening doors of perception with plants. And from there, there's been then working with flower essences, which there's no chemical constituents in them at all. It's strictly vibratory resonance, what people would call the signature of the plant. Then there's plant spirit healing, which is something that I have been working with a lot, which you don't even have to ingest the plant. So anyway, I look at this and say, oh, here we go. Plants are just preceding us in our spiritual evolution, in our raising of consciousness. They're just ahead of us. And if we pay attention to them at this level and allow ourselves to receive guidance at this level, oh, then we can jump it up a notch and raise our consciousness to the next level that maybe, I mean, I'm going for peace on earth. I'm going for that. I'm going for the big stuff. So did that answer your question? I kind of, anyway.
I think so. I mean, it opens up many different avenues of conversation, I think. One comment, and hopefully I won't get lost here and forget what I wanted to say, the other things I wanted to say, was that I don't know of any biology book that would suggest that back in the primordial goo of things, that plants were making decisions. And I'm not saying that I disagree with you. I just think that it's something that we often will not hear about. It's
Oh
just
no.
that
Yeah. You might not hear
it
about
just happened. It just happened.
it. It
It
is
just
there
happened.
though. I mean, I resourced it in my book, so.
Well, and it's interesting because I think that one of the things when you're talking about, well, what are the plants doing now? What precedes the next evolutionary step, if you will? And I think you're right that there is no mistake that there is a relationship developing with plants. It's been going on since the 60s and a little bit before. And it changes our perspective, not just on who we are, but what plants are capable of. And people, so it got people to begin working with plants, I think, in a different way, which I think is really good. But there's also, I think, in regards to this, I'm going to share a little story with you. I was teaching a class a year ago this past fall, and it was a course, the title of the course was Ecology, Economy, and Spirituality. Ecology, Economy, and Christ. I forgot that one. But I had students reading essays by bell hooks, and bell hooks has this essay about tobacco. And she talks about how it has been desacralized. And I started asking students about different instances of plants being desacralized. And one student, started talking about cannabis. And I'm like, yes. And it had also been the case that that previous summer in Denver, there was the meeting of the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies. And as the president, Rick Doblin, was giving his sort of keynote speech, he got interrupted by a group of protesters, indigenous protesters, because they saw that these sacred medicines, these sacred plants, were being co-opted. And So I bring all this into the class, and afterwards I got an email, and this is kind of a conservative school, from a student saying that many of them were very concerned that I was encouraging drug use and things like that.
You were encouraging what?
Drug use.
Oh,
and I took that as an opportunity to sort of reflect on this, and I came back with a response the following week, and I'm like, okay, well, number one, there's a difference, I think, between drug and medicine, and the indigenous population see this as medicine. And if you're saying that drug is bad and these people see it as medicine and it comes out of their culture, what is that saying about these people? And I mention all of this. I know it may seem like I'm straying far away from your book.
That's okay. I'm with you.
Yeah. But I mentioned this because you do write about the necessity of decolonizing our heart, our mind, and our bodies. And I saw all of that as being an example of how there are these forces at play with these plant medicines now that are still attempting to colonize them. And it seems to me that this act of decolonizing is going to have to encompass not just how we view our relationship with plants, but also how we view our relationship with other people and other cultures.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole decolonizing thing. I mean, I you can see I'm looking like I'm warm right now. It's because I am. I spend my winters in Belize now. Mm. And coming here I was actually writing about that. I was here and it was just so in my face of my own colonizer mind and how I had to really like look at it deeply. I mean, I was deeply disturbed by the deeply ingrained stuff that was coming up. And so, yes, we have to be like really aware of who's been working with these plants for like centuries. And then suddenly we come along and say, let's use some Palo Santo, you know, or whatever it might be. And without any context at all, as a descendant of a colonizer,
right.
We're not really an intact culture, especially in the U.S., especially. I mean, a lot of places, I'm sure, but especially in the U.S., most of us are, you know, we're just orphans, you know, don't even know where we really came from, really. And so we're not an intact culture, whereas so many of these plants have come up through intact cultures. It's a whole different thing. Now, having said that, one of our late, great, amazing prophets of our time, John Trudeau, would say that, you know, we all have indigenous roots, and we have to, you know, I mean, it might go back a long time, but we have to really remember and wake up those indigenous roots. And what does that mean? And then to me, that is part of like the beginning of the decolonization of your mind. And is like somewhere in here, in this bloodline, there was a person that hadn't left the earth yet.
Right.
And who's that? And what got handed down to me from that place? I'm not sure a lot of people are thinking about that kind of thing right now, but anyway, just in this whole colonizing thing. I mean, it's big. It's a big thing.
Yeah. Well, I always say that I always feel like that my imagination has been colonized, that we are inherently, I think, creative people. And, you know, your book is talking about co-creativity, and it seems like in order to step up to the plate, we're going to have to not only decolonize our hearts, our minds, and our bodies, but our imaginations as well.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, it's like I said, it's been so ingrained. Statistically speaking, it really only takes one generation to forget to just drop into that amnesia. And I feel like we, as in our, in the U.S. anyway, I'll keep it to something I know, is that, I mean, we have been, we're in deep amnesia. We are in deep amnesia. And my teacher, Martine Prechtel, speaks a lot about the amnesia, but that there's a little seed in there. There's a little seed in there of what it means to be intact and to come from that place of indigenosity. Even though he has this great story about corn, and when we would go and to be with him in class and everything, when we leave, he'd always give us kernels of this corn that was given to him in Guatemala and in his time, years he spent there. And so, you know, I'd bring my six little kernels, you know, it's not a lot, six little kernels that you have to plant all right around each other so they'll cross-pollinate. And then I'd bring him back, you know, then I'd get a couple ears of corn, and the next time we'd go, I'd bring him back that. But this corn that I would bring back would look completely different than the corn that he had given me. So what he came to realize in his own work, and having lead told by his teacher, you have to return to the land of the enemy. And you have to bring the corn to the land of the enemy. U.S. So he comes back to the States and starts to do his work, and he's got this corn that he, but what happens is that the corn changes, and it's not the original. It's not like the original blueprint, but it carries like a little seed of that. So there's a little kernel of the originality, and yet it's becoming a new being in and of itself in the milieu that it's grown in and the people that it's with and all that. And so we're growing into something different, but still, we still need to hold the kernel of the originality. Yeah. So that was so powerful for me to just kind of grok that one and understand. It's like, oh, it's not like we're going to go back to the way it was. That will never happen. And yet, if we don't carry that seed forward, or we don't carry that memory forward to some degree, then anyway. So yeah. It's just.
Yeah. Well, the what comes to my mind with this is kind of the same thing with tobacco and the desacralization of it, where, you know, we've desacralized this plant and it's had extreme consequences, you know, in terms of, you know, nicotine addiction and cancer and whatnot. And I was thinking kind of the same thing with corn. We have desacralized corn. You know, it's one of our major crops, but it's turned into high fructose corn syrup, and that is killing us too. So it almost seems as if our greatest disease is desacralizing the plants.
The tobacco thing is a big one, and so many people treat tobacco like, well, I mean, it's abused for sure. It's sure. Abused, but then, as if like, oh, that you don't put tobacco on your altar, for example. Right. You know, I mean, I have cornmeal and tobacco on my altar. I mean, I grow them both myself, but you know, it's kind of like they're there. And because I have a relationship with them, and people are like, oh, you can't put tobacco. Yeah, oh, tobacco, you know, and tobacco is not the enemy here. Right. It's not tobacco. It's what's been done to tobacco. It's how tobacco has been abused. And then it's gotten this bad rap of like, oh, it's some horrible plant that gives you cancer.
Right.
So that's what I look to, is like a lot of these plants and that, you know, and all of them, I mean, wait a minute, let me back that up. Not all of them, many of them have been demonized in some way. I mean, the poisonous plants, poison ivy, you know, the poisonous plants, oh, they're bad. Or, oh, the, you know, non-natives now, that's the whole thing. Anything that's called an alien that's come from across the big pond. Oh, now that's bad. Oh, the invasives. Oh, they're bad. All these plants are bad. No, they're not bad. You know, it's there's a reason why there's invasive plants. And to be honest, there's a great book called Invasive Plants. Timothy Scott wrote that book. And a lot of the invasive plants are highly medicinal. And, you know, like Japanese knotweed. Well, guess what Japanese knotweed is really helpful for? Lyme's disease. And so many of them are, anyway, they're, my experience is that plants show up on a small scale, like in your backyard, the plants that show up are like, those are for you. And then on a bigger scale too, kind of for the collective, like what does the collective need right now? They show up when you need them. These plants have that much biointelligence because they show up when they're needed. So yeah, the whole desacralization, I mean, really it's not just plants, it's the whole earth.
Right. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
You know, the whole earth is really becoming, you know, nature's viewed as a commodity. You know, that's, you know, you're not going to go into the, well, some people would go into the forest and look at all that, all these trees as bored feet. How many bored feet can we get out of this? Yeah. Instead, like, oh, let's take a nice walk through this forest and breathe in all the terpenes that are like really doing amazingly healing things to our body, like in this moment. So, yeah.
Well, that's the heart of colonization, though. Yeah. I mean, if you look at this nation, you know, it's that's always my immediate response to anyone who says, well, this country was founded as a Christian nation. I'm like, no, it wasn't. This was founded by colonizers for its natural resources. You know, that happened before the pilgrims ever came over.
That's right. That's right. You
know. Mm-hmm. No. Yeah.
Yep. It's resources, and it's a very richly, it's a rich land as well. Mm-hmm. And absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I know. You know, there's this whole thing now too. Maybe you've heard about it. Plant blindness. I wrote a little bit about it in the book. This whole thing, how there's been all these studies now about how, you know, they'll show a person a picture of a jungle scene and the monkeys are crawling around in the trees and everything. And then they'll show a picture of, you know, and then they'll say, you know, like, well, what do you see in this picture? And the only thing that people see are the monkeys. They don't see all the plant life. So this whole thing about plant blindness and how much that is shaping even courses in universities and, you know, botany programs and like all of that is like because there's this thing where people don't even see the plants or recognize that they're here on this planet as a huge part of life that gives life even.
Right. Yeah. It's just background.
Background.
They look at the animals as the foreground and all the plants as the background and they just kind of take it for granted, I think.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about what it's like to work with the plants. You know, how does one go about developing a relationship with plants?
Well, you know, I always feel like it's important to start where you're at, like start where you can. And I mean, I really encourage people who really don't really know about any of this, just start with your breath. I mean, it's so simple and it's so easy and everybody does it. So that's a given. We already talked about that. Beyond that, in the science world, they would say that the foundational way in which all communication takes place in the biological world is through light and sound, which carries a vibration. So there's this vibratory resonance, and the plants carry a vibratory resonance. You and I carry a vibratory resonance. Ours might be a little different, and different plants have different resonances. So I really like working with the resonance because I find it to just be so. So anyway, there's this thing called felt sensation. And this was a technique kind of that was put together by a man named Eugene Genlin. And he had a little book called Focusing. His work with felt sensation was kind of in the psychological arena. It was to help people get in touch with their emotions. But I did some work with Eugene like a long, 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 long time ago. And I I realized, like, I don't like to reinvent the wheel. So I realized, oh, this would be a great way to, you know, to be working with plants. And so I had kind of adapted his thing of felt sensation. So felt sensation is you're sitting, you're being with a plant. You're like, okay, let's be friends kind of thing. And you sit with the plant and you pay attention. Don't be trying to, you know, balance your checkbook in your head while you're doing this. Pay attention, be present, and you'll feel somewhere in your body. And this is a sensation. This is not an emotion. This is a sensation in your body somewhere. And sensations are, you know, tingling is a sensation. Heat is a sensation, or cold is a sensation. Tightness is a sensation. You know what a sensation is. So you pay attention to where you're feeling a sensation when you're with this plant. And then you take that sensation and you kind of hone in on it. It's like, so a sensation might be everything soft, 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 soft. You know, like you just feel everything is soft. You know, the air is even soft around you. Your skin is soft. Everything is soft. And then you go, okay, soft. Let's see, soft as silk or soft as velvet or creamy soft, like soft as butter. Like what kind of soft are we talking about? So you take it from out here, way out here, and you focus it to what exactly kind of soft are we talking about here? So you hone in on what the sensation, what kind of words do really describe that sensation? And then it's called giving it a handle. So you put a handle on the sensation to describe it. And it could also be a posture. I have one. White pine is tower of strength. White pine is just like this big, straight. I mean, it's, you know, when you look out on the horizon in the Northeast anyway, when you look out on the horizon, the biggest trees are white pine. So it's just this. So for me, white pine is like my shoulders go back. I stand straight and tall right in the center of my being. And I'm like, you know, that's tower of strength. But it's really a posture. I mean, I say the words tower of strength, but it's my, you know, it's a posture. I can feel it. That's what the sensation is. It's just, I immediately just. So once you've kind of gotten that, you've gotten the handle, it means that you can, then it takes everything out of randomness. It's like, takes it out of the place of like, well, maybe if I'm lucky when I sit with that plant next time, maybe I'll feel that same sensation. That would be nice. It takes it out of that arena. Because now you know exactly what the vibratory resonance feels like in your body, what the sensation is, and you can go right to that sensation. So like you could go to soft as silk. You can just, you know, quietly sit there and you don't even need to have the plant with you. This is the other thing. Plants work outside of time and space. So you can just soft as silk and you can feel the soft as silkness and you can call up that vibratory resonance and you're right there with the plant. It's like, so what happens is that you start to kind of like ride the same wavelength of vibratory resonance, of frequency and wavelength. That's what vibratory resonance is. Frequency are the ups and downs of the waves. And then the wavelength is length. It's either long or short or in between. So, and, you know, it kind of starts about, you know, about like this. And an octave, you know, is eight measures apart. Then that creates harmony. And so you start to ride this, like, wavelength and a harmony. There does come a point, or let me put it this way. It's possible for you to come to the point of sinking vibrations. And then that's when you're like, you're there. You and the plant are merged. You're one. You're there's no separation whatsoever. And this is really super possible because, and again, I'm just going to mention this one more time. Not that science is better than, but I know that people like to know that it's actually in the science, which is that plants have a greater ability to fine tune their resonance to you than you do to them. That's all in the science. There's this man. I could run along for a very long time on this topic, but so you need to cut me off if it's time to be quiet. But you do need to know about the work of Fritz Popp, because he was awesome. He's the guy that discovered biophotons at the nucleus of the cell of all living beings, including plants. Anyway, if you want to talk about that, we can talk about that too.
Well, I actually had the biophotons here because in that section you titled it Original Brilliance. And what came to my mind is the theologian Matthew Fox. He talks a lot about original blessing. And I saw kind of a connection between the two. And the connection I saw is that with like Fox and the original blessing is we have this idea of original sin that tells us a lot about who we are. But it's just a story. It's a story that we're all sinners and somehow.
It's not in the Bible.
Right. Exactly.
Wait. It's not. It was not in Jesus. Jesus did not ever say those words that we were.
Right. Well, it's not in the Hebrew Bible either. And in Judaism, they don't really have this idea of original sin. So, yes, I also teach religious studies. So, you're absolutely right. Yeah. And I took a course with Matthew Fox. I had the opportunity to do that. But it seems to me that this original brilliance is telling us another story about who we are. And who are we, according to this original
Well, I love this topic because, we've all got this notion that we're like these horrible people, and we come in that way. These sweet little beings of light that come in, beam themselves in, and you're saying that one's full of sin? Really? Anyway, at the nucleus of the cell of all living beings in the biological world. So we'll just continue on with plants here. So you and I both in the nucleus. So this is at the DNA level. The nucleus is the DNA level. We all have biophotons. All plants have biophotons. So these are particles of light. And when you and I are really like, we're really connecting, like my biophotons and your biophotons are making a beam of light. They call it a laser, like a laser beam of light. That's when we're really communicating, is when our little biophotons are beaming back and forth with each other. This is true of plants as well. When your biophotons and the plant's biophotons are like becoming coherent, it's called coherence, when you make a beam of light, then that's when communication takes place. And that's why they talk about light and sound, and that's the basis of communication in the biological world. So, and there's a vibratory resonance that then happens on this beam of light. Now, the next piece of this is that we have what's most people would say that most humans these days have two intact strands of DNA. So that means two strands of DNA in a double helix. However, we have the capacity to have 12 intact strands. And I don't understand this. They say 99% of the DNA is not encoded or intact. So we're only operating on 1%. Of our potential intact strands of DNA that have light at the nucleus of the cell. So that means then they're intact. They make a beam internally, and they can make a beam externally as well. So if that's the case, 99% is not intact and or encoded. They used to call it junk DNA. And I'm like, let's be a little more imaginative, everybody. So now it's called non-coded DNA, which means doesn't have any inherent in genetic material. And that we can get into epigenetics and all that too about that. But so the point being here, what if we live to our full potential, which is 12 intact strands of DNA or six double helixes, or as Zach Bush would say, four strands of three. That's what he suggests. So it's like what if we could take that other 99% and it could become intact and encoded through epigenetically, meaning your environment, your milieu that you're within, and how your genes express. So what if we encoded that through epigenetics, we encoded those with peace, love, you know, cooperation, gratitude, da 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 da, the lengthy list that it could be, right. And it was intact strands of light. Is that what enlightenment means? I always want to know what does that mean? Enlightenment? What does that mean? So I want to dig to see. And so I think, all right. I think we have the capacity. So our original brilliance is that we have the capacity to be literally on a physical level, enlightened beings with DNA that's encoded with the reality we want to create. Some might say, oh, that sounds grandiose, but we're not that far from it. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, some people would say that there's, since like the early 80s, children being born, some of them have more intact strands of DNA.
Interesting.
And that epigenetically speaking, it's the same amount of time that it takes to forget one generation. This is not eons of evolution. In one generation, this can happen through epigenetics. I think that's kind of cool.
You know, it is. It is.
I like the idea of this. And plus, I just got to throw this in about Fritz Popp, because he's so brilliant, was so brilliant. He's passed on now. But is that one of the things that he did that was so revolutionary was that he had certain plants that he worked with where he gave the, and I'm, he did this via a machine, where he gave the light of this plant to unhealthy cells like cancer cells, because he would say that an unhealthy cell, the light has gone awry at the nucleus of the cell, meaning that it's not patterned toward health. So he would give some light from a plant to an unhealthy cell to repattern the light toward health. That is leading edge. That is the way that health, in my humble opinion, the healthcare should be going, is towards looking at unhealthy patterned light at the nucleus of the cell. And that's what creates an unhealthy cell. So, we have the capacity to be completely brilliant. And that I think it's our birthright. Mm. I even think that maybe somewhere along the line, those strands were intact and something happened. I don't know. Something happened along the line that went, split those asunder. Wow. And that's where the separation happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, where you thought the separation happened. It's hard to identify.
It's hard to pinpoint any of this stuff. You can guess at it because, you know, I don't know when that happened, but it makes me wonder about, you know, you kind of hear about like all these amazing civilizations that were way before, even weren't quite on our timeline. And so, but that were really much more evolved, you might say. And then something happened. And I'm kind of like, well, what happened? Something. And I don't know if it's part of our, I don't know. I don't know if it's part of the, just the human condition. Like there's this whole thing called free will and choice, and we have to choose it. I mean, we have to choose it. I mean, I think we have to choose it, probably.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a bunch of people say, I'm not going to choose that. What, enlightenment? Eh.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I'm not really sure. But anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have other ideas about the separation, but that was kind of in more recent times, you know, like about 12,000 years ago, it started with the invent of agriculture. And then
and that's
how
us
that
controlling plants.
Controlling plants, yeah, starting to, well, just so you start staying in one spot too. That gets into ownership of land, and then that gets to, you know, like wanting the resources from the land, and then that gets into empire building and blah, blah, blah. And then, I mean, on and on and on, you know, it just keeps going. And so, but yeah, for sure. And kind of more, and I say recent, I mean, like we're talking 12,000 years. It's about when now they're saying that agriculture got started about 12,000 years ago. But yeah, I'm not sure about kind of the origination of the separation, if that even is what happened, if there was even a time in for human beings when there were intact strands of DNA. But it's possible that that did exist and something happened that. What's your thoughts on that? Do you have a thought on that?
I have no idea. I you know, I don't know about the ancient civilizations. I'm open to the idea, and I think it's definitely a possibility. I think that we did, I think agriculture is always identified as, you know, probably the thing that changed everything. And I agree with that. And I think agriculture also changed our idea of the sacred and divinity. I think most of the gods that we know of and have inherited come out of agriculture. And I think that before agriculture, I don't know that there were gods. I think that there was spirit, maybe, and that we were within it and one with it. You know, it's interesting. I had someone ask me, and I've been reflecting on this for a little bit about, you know, I've been doing the podcast for a while now. I don't know what number this is going to be, maybe something like 180, 185, something like that. But I was asked if I've noticed any kind of recurring themes. And one of the most dominant themes that keeps coming up is this idea that we need to remember who we are. You know, and that's something that you talk about. We need to remember who we are. And I think about that, and as you were talking, I was also thinking with enlightenment, right? I am also very suspect of that. I usually don't trust anyone who says that they or claims to be enlightened. And I always throw one of my favorite Thoreau quotes at them, which is, you know, I've never met a man who has been quite enlightened. If I had, how could I look him in the face? But what I was thinking of as well is part of the kind of the Western philosophical tradition, you have Plato. And Plato, I think, gives us our model of enlightenment in many ways of, you know, going from being prisoners in a cave to experiencing this grand reality of, and, you know, the good, which is symbolized by the sun, which is enlightenment. But he also says that Plato is kind of a reincarnationist in the sense that we had all knowledge, but when we are born into the world, we forget it. And so I think that there's something, maybe somewhere we have to take a deeper look at this and how it emerges in the various cultures. But what I always do is whenever I talk to someone and they're like, we have to remember who we are. And I think this is in your book. I found these two strains separated by several chapters. But the way I always phrase it is in the sense of initiation and in the sense of a shamanic initiation, because often what happens is in the shamanic initiation, the shaman has this symbolic dismemberment. And then what they actually have to do is remember themselves. And so I saw that in your work, because you talk about the plants and you say that the plants are initiating us. They're offering us an initiation.
Yeah, it's super good. It's like plants are like, you know, the old Buddhist saying, you know, when the student's ready, the teacher appears. Yeah. That's what plants are like. You know, when you're ready, when I'm ready, they bring something else here, here. How about this one now? And that's happened time and time again for me. And the initiations was one of those times. And this You know, I started with the initiations in 2010. And so what's happening is that in the plant's evolution, so this is part of their evolution too, is that they're stepping up to serve as the elders, like the elders of the tribe who would initiate the young people into adulthood, like that. And because we're, you know, a whole society of uninitiated humans, we don't have a clue what it means to live sanely within the collective. And right. So the plants are stepping it up to serve as the elders, to initiate us into what it means to be truly human, like, and to walk the path that you came to walk, you know, the gifts that you came in with, sharing those gifts, being in service by sharing your gifts with the world, whatever, you know, not just people world, but all of the world. And these are, we're talking common plants. We're talking everyday common. We're not talking ayahuasca. We're not talking about psychotropic plants. We're talking dandelion, nettle, St. John's wort, you know, very common plants.
Right.
And what's happening is unbelievable with these plants. And so basically it's what the way in which I'm working with initiations, it's a 3-day ceremony. The whole thing, it's really in a ceremonial context, the whole time. And we come together, we work with one plant, all of us working with one plant, and we make it. It's usually an ingestible plant. It can be a plant that's not, and you could work with a essence or something like that that has no chemical constituents. You could do that. But most of the ones so far that I've been working with are edible, are ingestible. And so we make what's called an elixir, different components of the plant, different mediums, different parts of the plant, and all. You put that together. And then throughout the 3 days, I suggest that people do a light fast, just so you don't have a bunch of stuff in there getting in the way, a bunch of food. And you just let the plant, like, do its work with you, do its magic with you. Yeah. So we ingest this elixir. We do 2 ounces 8 times over a period of, it's about 2.5 days total. And then we do all different kinds of things with the plant. And we embody the plant. We make masks. Yeah. And we embody the plant. And we speak for the plant in a council mm-hmm. based on the council of all beings, but it's a council of whatever the plant is. We do that around a fire at night. You know, we do a thing called green breath, which is it's like transformational breath work only focused on plants. So it's a 72 minutes of breathing. It's very powerful and very potent, and you go really deep with the plants. And so anyway, this initiation process is phenomenal, and it just continues to be this miraculous thing that the plants are bringing forward. And people, there's spontaneous healings that are happening. I'm talking on the spot. And, you know, you can sit and watch somebody like shift. It's amazing. And in the last 3 to 4 years, there's been a lot of personal healing. In the last 3 to 4 years, the plants they're starting to move outside of individuals to the collective level. So right. Usually what's happening now is the plants, there's still personal healing for sure, but there's also like a thing that has to heal on the collective level yeah. that the plants are bringing forward, which everybody in the initiation then experiences it. And it's just, it's yeah. just so amazing. So the latest thing is that the plants, they kind of give me little directives. I was like, okay, you got to get plant initiations out there more. And I'm like, okay, great. I'm one person and there's only so many plant initiations I can do in a year. So like, you got any suggestions here? And they're like, well, you have to teach other people to facilitate initiations. And I was like, So it turns out one of my colleagues, Emma Fitchett, who lives in the UK, she and I have done a lot of work together. And so she and I, we just had a meeting before me talking with you, she and I had a meeting. We're putting together a course, which is going to be an intensive year-long intensive course to train people to be the facilitators. And to be real clear, the people are not the initiators. The plant is. So it's really important. You got to have a like good relations with these plants. So we're training people to become facilitators so that we can get the initiations out there more, because it's super important. And what's happened, you know, it's like, it's really helping us to come back into being more intact and remembering who we are. It's all about remembering who we are, these initiations, and kind of coming home to yourself, coming home to nature and coming home to yourself. It's quite amazing. So that's part of what's going on, is we're good. Trying to get it out there more.
Yeah. Can you say, do you have any idea what draws people to this? What someone is
the
like,
plants.
So like someone is just, they just have this experience where.
Yep. I ask that question all the time. Yeah. Why did you, what brought you to this course, or why did you sign up for this initiation? I don't know. I was sitting out in my garden, and this, I don't know, but I just had to come. I was like, so the plants are calling people to these initiations. Mm. That's what's happening. And I have to laugh, because the plants really call the shots in these initiations. Mm. I was doing a couple years ago, I was doing hawthorn, which is a tree. And there's a big hawthorn tree across the road. I live way out in the middle of in the country. And there's this big hawthorn tree across the road, and it's this old grandma tree. It's a big tree. It's where I usually harvest my berries and all that. And then right at my place, I have a young tree. I'm going to say it's 10 to 15 years old, that was given to me by some students. And it's a young tree. And I was sitting up near that young tree, and I was just kind of like being in my daydream kind of thing. And my eyes kind of went over to that tree, and I was like, you know, I would love to do a hawthorn initiation here sometime, but like, you never bloom. You've never bloomed. Right. And hawthorn was like, well, maybe if you did an initiation, I would bloom. And I went, oh, that's how it works, huh? I said, oh, so does that mean you want to be the initiator for next year? It's like, mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay. So then I'm going over to the other hawthorn tree, and there's vines growing up. I'm kind of cleaning up around the bottom and pulling vines out. And I'm like, I'm so glad you're going to be the initiator this year. And this big mama hawthorn says, yeah, and you're going to bring everybody on pilgrimage. And I was like, pilgrimage? Like, what would that look like? Well, it would look like everybody would walk from your place over to here on a pilgrimage. And I'm like, okay. So now I know what pilgrimage is, but of course I had to Google it all up and say pilgrimage. Okay. And so anyway, so we've got these two hawthorn trees, old one, young one. And I go out in the spring to the young one, because I'd been paying so much attention to the old one. I was like, oh, I got to go pay attention to that young one. And I go to the young one, and there's all these little buds. And I went, oh my gosh, you're going to flower. And hawthorn was like, yeah, isn't that what we agreed on? That I would flower and you would get like the initiation together, you would facilitate it. I said, yeah, but you've never flowered, and oh my gosh, you're gonna flower. I was so excited. And the father was like, well, yeah. I mean, I told you that that's what I would do. So here we are with this young one that's flowering. Never flowered before, but here we are. And the other one, the big one over there, where we're all going to go on a pilgrimage, which turns out, you know, all the message was, your whole life is a pilgrimage, by the way. So it was such a huge learning for me. It was like a big one, because it was like, Pam, if a plant tells you it's going to do something, you need to trust that wholeheartedly, because plants don't lie. So I was like, right. Okay. It was huge for me, of like, I really need to trust it. I got to stop questioning that, oh, it's going to bloom because we agreed on it. Yes. Anyway, that was kind of a long way of telling you whatever we were talking about before.
Yeah.
Oh, the initiation. That's what we were talking about. The initiations. Right, yes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That the plants are behind it all.
They're behind it all. Absolutely. Yeah, they're in control, not us. We are definitely not.
Yeah. Well, hopefully more and more people can start developing these relationships and hearing the plants. You know, it sometimes it seems to me that there also has to be an intention on the part of the individual.
That sure helps.
Yeah, mm-hmm. to open themselves and to, yes. You know, for me, I think one of the beginning places is going to be to just, I don't know, find, you know, I think it's been called like your Gaia spot or something like that, where you can be with and in nature, or, and even in your flat or apartment or what have you, you can have a potted plant, but to just begin sitting with it, you know, just for a few minutes to be with it and be in a different way.
Yes. I call it a sit spot, but yes, same
thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your sit spot, just your spot that where you kind of naturally feel connected already. Yeah. And just to, you know, okay, this is another thing that I wrote about in the book, which is one of the aspects of co-creative partnership is time.
Yeah.
And how we're so ruled by external time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it serves its purpose. Like you and I, you know, need to connect at a certain time in order to be able to do this. And we have to agree on that time. Get it.
Right.
But when your life is ruled by it, and that's the only way you operate 24/7, it takes away that the magic of internal time, which is you really just being on your own clock, getting in your own rhythm. And the tendency is when you do that, you sync with earth rhythms. That's the tendency.
Yeah.
But the magic moment is when you are able to be in that internal time place, and that opens the door, like opens the portal to the now moment, to this one right here. So you're just in the present, and you're not back there, and you're not in the, you know, you're not heading out in the future direction. You're just right here, right now. And what that does is it just opens that portal of that now moment, and so much magic happens there.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It's all we have is the now.
It's all we really have. You only have one moment to the next.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
when we really allow it to be in that present place, that's when you can be like totally with the plants or any aspect of nature. So in your sit spot, being completely present in your sit spot, magic will happen for sure.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like we need some magic for healing. You know, it's you listed at the very beginning of the book, you talked about the 12 universal laws or laws of the universe. And a lot of these I see as being very similar or sharing with hermetic ideas, especially out of the Kabbalion. But the one that I always refer to is this law of correspondence, which often in hermeticism, it's, you know, as above, so below. But I always say, and this is how you seem to understand it too, is as within, so without. And that our, what we see around us, the external world, is a reflection of our internal world. And what that tells me is we have a lot of healing to do.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Yeah.
This is quite true. We have a lot to do. We have some work to do, but the good news is we've got plants to help us.
Right.
There's a plan for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So, all right. Well, Pam, I know we've kind of run over our time allotment here a little bit. So let me ask you the final questions I always ask is, what are you working on next? What you've got coming up? You've already talked about that you've got training for people who want to run these things, but what else?
Yeah. Well, obviously this book is like a big deal right now, and has come out on March. It was released on March 4th. So that's kind of very new and big. So that's happening. I do initiations I'm in the States. I'm in Vermont. So I'm in that part of the world in the States, and I have this year coming up. There will be motherwort is the plant that has stepped forward. Motherwort is the lion-hearted, Leonaris cardiaca, the lion-hearted. And so, again, motherwort is one of those ones that's stepping forward to, I mean, everybody's heart needs healing across the board. So bringing in some personal heart healing, But kind of on that collective level too, what I'm receiving from Motherwort has a lot to do with, I mean, the lion heart. It's like the courage to let your heart lead, and, you know, and to be really strong and courageous in these very challenging, changing times that we're in. I mean, it's actually a very exciting time to be alive, but we got some challenges ahead of us. And so plants like Motherwort that are really stepping forward to help us in that. So that's, there'll be mother, I'll do Motherwort twice during the summer. And so you can find any work that I'm doing on my website, which is wakeuptonature.com. So that's my website. The other website I want to mention, it's a nonprofit organization that you mentioned in my bio, is the Organization of Nature Evolutionaries. And we do a whole lot of work, a lot of educational work around, you know, co-create a partnership with nature. So that website is natureevolutionaries.com. So those two websites, you can find out what's going on. And there's a lot of good stuff, There's other people that also do plant initiations. There's a woman in Canada right now doing some plant initiations, Jen Fry. She's in Pennsylvania. So there's others, Emma over in the UK. So Carol Guyette in Ireland. There's other people doing initiations as well. Yeah. And, you know, I do online courses here, here and there. So we can watch out for those as well.
All right. Yeah, I just wanted to add the Motherwort with what you were saying about courage. I often will ask my guests, especially when the conversation is about the state of our environment, you know, the ecological crises, I will often ask if they have hope. And I didn't ask you because in my mind, it is abundantly clear that you do. But I had asked a scholar, Evan Berry, Dr. Evan Berry, about this. And he said that he thought hope was the wrong virtue. He said that what we need now is courage. So when you were talking about Motherwort and the idea of the courage, that kind of came to my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, I think courage is pretty necessary right now. I see a lot of people that I talk with. I talk with a lot of folks, and some people are getting pretty discouraged right now. And I'm not a doomsday person at all. Never have been. I always feel like, you know, the next iteration the next iteration will be just kind of like, it will be even more beautiful and dynamic and than the one before it. So I feel like that. And I feel courageous right now myself. I'm really like, no, we got this. And the plants have our back. That's the other thing. They want us to succeed. We are like their little brothers and sisters. They want us to succeed. They want us to do well. And so they got our backs. And when I feel like I don't have to do this alone, I don't have to do this alone. Nobody has to do this alone. You've got help.
Yeah.
And so, that's what I would say. But courage.
Okay. Yeah. Well, wonderful. Well, Pam, thank you so much for your time today. I very much enjoyed the conversation.
It's fun to talk to somebody else who likes to talk about the same thing as me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I like plants. I love plants. And we could go on and on about that. But
yeah, we could go on and on.
Sure. Yeah, I'll be mindful of the listener and everything. But thank you. And I really appreciated it.
Yes. Thanks.
And that's a wrap on episode 191 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you're part of my YouTube audience. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, please hit that like button if you're watching on YouTube, and don't forget to subscribe to the channel and click that notification bell. You can also follow Rebel Spirit Radio on whatever audio platform you use for listening to podcasts. Right now, I'm nearing 20,000 downloads on the audio platforms, yet I only have 12 followers, and one of those is me. It only takes a second to like, follow, or subscribe. It's totally free, and it really does help. Putting together this podcast is a labor of love, and I do love it. I put a lot of effort and time into each episode, so if you find value in the conversations I provide here, I hope you can find it in your heart to send a little love my way. With more subscriptions and followers, I could possibly get some sponsorship, and honestly, having some funds come my way to help with equipment, hosting, and other necessary subscriptions and costs would be really helpful. You can also help by joining my Patreon at patreon.com/rebelspirit. The link is also in the episode description.
You can also buy a Super Thanks on YouTube to help support my work. As I always like to say, I'm here in the Front Range now doing missionary work in regards to religion, spirituality and ecology, consciousness, the esoteric, and how all of this can help us heal humanity's sacred relationship with the living earth. So if you feel moved by the rebel spirit, you know, I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me in my efforts to share the good news. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to or watching Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may you be in peace, may you flourish in all possible ways, and may you continue to nurture your rebel spirit.